Hey guys, welcome to another episode of You're the Cure. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. We have Ananda Moore joining us today. We're going to talk homeopathy. Actually, I think my wife knows more about homeopathy than I do. And just to set the stage here, originally, I used to think homeopathy just was another word for holistic. You know, medical doctors are not trained about any other healing arts, any other ways to practice medicine. We get trained very, very narrowly, pharmaceutical based. I've talked about it a lot of times on the show, the Flexner Report, 1910. Abraham Flexner, education specialist hired by Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller to go survey the American medical education landscape. And he reported back to those guys that, hey, there's too much chaos out there and too many different ways to educate doctors. We need to standardize this to one model. He chose allopathic, recommended it, and that's what was chosen. So all the money went down that road. And so those schools, research institutions, and hospitals and companies, treatment protocols, all got the money in the press. And everything else got marginalized and sometimes made illegal. And the AMA gets involved in, which, by the way, the AMA, I was just looking back at this. AMA, American Medical Association, founded in 1847. American Institute of Homeopathy, AIH, founded 1844. Yeah. Between 1859 and 1880, there was 5,000 homeopathic physicians graduating from United States Homeopathic Medical School. So just give you a little context, pre-1900, back when we were healthy, by the way, we had a wide variety of educational opportunities for healthcare practitioners that got narrowed down. So many things happened in our country in the early 1900s. We've talked about some of that on the show, but in regards to medical education, allopathic's been crowned the king, but those protocols, like we've talked about so many times, get the worst outcomes. We're talking 0% to 3% at best, absolute risk reduction by using pharmaceuticals to try to prevent diseases like heart attack and stroke. Stroke, you're at 0.4% risk reduction by taking a statin to lower cholesterol. Heart attack, you're at about a 1.3% risk reduction. Osteoporosis drugs to prevent a hip fracture, you're at 0.4%. SSRIs for depression, anxiety, you're around a 3% 12-month cure rate. Chemotherapy, you're at about a 1.9% contribution for five-year survival. Alzheimer's drugs, you're at three weeks more of independent living, keeping you out of the nursing home, three extra weeks. All of these drugs with a high side effect profile, third leading cause of death in America, 200,000 plus deaths. That's conservative. It's probably more than that. These are drugs taken appropriately, prescribed as directed, taken as directed, not overdosing. So by any measure, any standard, I would say we probably need something alternative to this disaster of not only spending trillions of dollars, third leading cause of death, outcome 0 to 3% absolute risk reduction. It's kind of maddening. And to know that there's a form of healing and treatment that's been around for a couple hundred years, at least, maybe more. We'll let Ananda tell us the more of the history. I don't know if I'm allowed to say zero side effect, but I'm pretty sure zero side effect potential, but we'll get into that some too. So if you don't know what homeopathy is, we'll define that. If you do know what homeopathy is, you're going to love the show. Ananda's got a heart to help kids in particular. And we have the sickest kids in the world, the highest infant mortality rate. We're using drugs to suppress the first responders of our immune system, those cells that give us the mucus and the cough and the fever and the diarrhea and all the stuff to help deal with the germ. We suppress that, cough suppressants, mucus reducers, fever suppressants, all that. And now it's becoming more and more clear in the literature that's not good. There's a negative impact, and long term, there's even a negative impact on not letting the body naturally overcome some of these childhood illnesses. So it's really fascinating how just any way you look at the pharmaceutical approach to medicine, it's really kind of shown us it was a wrong choice. So that's enough of the intro for now. I want to jump right into the interview. So Ananda Moore, welcome to the show today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Dr. Ben, for having me here. And that was an incredible introduction. That's like I do a whole talk on how to talk about homeopathy, and you just did three quarters of it.
Oh, awesome. Well, then we just dive into the stuff. But I know you have so much knowledge and wisdom. You're a practitioner, also a filmmaker, guys. And that's what we're going to talk about, the film. It just came out recently. It's awesome. We'll recommend that. But Ananda's an educator, a clinician, years of experience. Ananda, you tell us your background. I know you're licensed in Canada, but kind of how'd you get into homeopathy? And just tell us your story a little bit, and then we'll get into more.
Oh, I'd love to share my story. I have been practicing for over 20 years. And originally, I was the first time I heard about homeopathy, I was in university, and I was doing a course on witchcraft and the occult.
Wow.
And that's where I first heard about homeopathy. So in all essence, it really was a course about thinking skeptically and being a skeptic. But at the same time, it was a religious studies course, and they were introducing different ideas to us. And homeopathy was one of them. And the reason that homeopathy is so controversial and so difficult for so many people to wrap their minds around is because it's based on this notion of minimum dose, and that you can dilute a substance, a plant, a mineral, a venom, all kinds of things that we use for our medicine, that you can dilute it quite a lot and actually make it more effective in terms of its healing effect. And when I first heard this, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought people were gullible and stupid, and I knew it was something that I just did not believe in, and that was that. That was enough for me. Until I was backpacking through India, I woke up really sick one morning, and this girl that I was traveling with, her mom was a homeopath, so she had her little homeopathy kit, and I was like throwing up and making a mess, and she comes along, and she's like, here, try this.
And I'm like, my kids now. Mom and her homeopathy kit.
Yeah. And I thought, I'll take your little sugar pills. I'll show you that they don't work, and then we can move on. And I took her little sugar pills, and lo and behold, in 15 minutes, I was feeling so much better. And I was in this little kind of campground place in a town called Hampi, and there were a lot of people there who were sick that day. And when I got better so quickly, and people all around me continued to be sick for days. So I was like, okay, maybe there is something to this. And I went and saw a homeopath, and he helped me with depression that had really been with me my entire life. And that was the first time that like this thing lifted off me, and I knew that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to help people, and this was a beautiful path. So that's how I was first introduced to homeopathy and made this decision to go study. And since then, homeopathy is really actually, to practice at an advanced level is really hard. It's very complex. It's psychology, it's biology, it's chemistry, it's understanding the patterns of everything we see in nature, and you're always learning more. The learning never ends, and there's an art to it. So as I was starting to work in my practice, I started thinking, if this is just placebo, if this doesn't really work, and it only appears that I'm helping people, I can do something much easier than this. And so I decided I wanted to make a film, and I wanted to do a deep dive and see if there were was any really large scale, really meaningful evidence out there in the world that could, that shows us that homeopathy works beyond placebo. Mm-hmm. And this long journey with the film, it took over 7 years to make. It actually came out in 2017, so it's been out for a while.
Oh, wow.
Still getting screened. I'm still getting requests. It's available online on different platforms. And what was I going to say? So to me, what I saw making this film just convinced me without a doubt that homeopathy is incredibly effective. that it can work on a large scale, that they don't like it because it's very affordable, can't be patented. And, you know, you were talking about the Flexner Report and Carnegie and Rockefeller, they were getting involved in petroleum. And they saw petroleum as a new form of medicine. And as if they could control that, they were controlling the world of oil. Imagine if medicine was in that purview as well. And that's what they did. So they focused on petroleum-based medicine. And these, most of the medicines we use today are synthetic. And why is that too? It's because you can patent it. You can completely control the manufacturing process, and you can stop, you can charge whatever you want for it, and you can stop other people from using it or from producing it. Yeah. And that's the problem with homeopathy. You can't patent it. You can replicate it easily. You can replicate it at home and make more remedy from remedy you already have. And it's effective. So now you're getting people off of sick care and not needing your stuff. So it's very hard for homeopathic studies to get published. We have excellent science. We have incredible people doing amazing work, physicists, chemists, water scientists. And not only does it have a huge impact on medicine, but it has a huge impact on our understanding of physics, our understanding of chemistry, our understanding of quantum medicine, because if homeopathy can work at such diluted levels, what is going on? Like, this doesn't fit our basic understandings of science. Yeah. But now we have the research to show that you can differentiate a homeopathically prepared solution from regular water. We see changes that can happen in vitro studies. So using like basic research on cell lines, for example, you can see cells in a petri dish responding to a homeopathic remedy. We see animals respond to homeopathic remedies, and we see people in randomized controlled trials responding to homeopathy beyond placebo.
Yeah.
So there's a lot there.
Well, I definitely want to get into some of these studies, but let's start at the very basic level for a listener who doesn't even know what homeopathy is and what remedy and this water thing. Can you go back historically, maybe, like where this come from, and then just explain like dilution and getting a remedy, and talk more on that basic introductory level?
I'd love to. So the person who, I don't want to say discovered homeopathy, but who led us down into actually an understanding of homeopathy is Samuel Hahnemann. And I'm saying he didn't discover it because his work is based on ideas from the time of Paracelsus. You can even find similar ideas in ancient traditional herbal medicine. And the idea, the key tenet behind homeopathy is that like cures like. And I love to tell how Hahnemann came to it. He was a physician in the 1800s. And he was an allopath. He was trained in the medicine of that time, which they called heroic medicine. He was actually the man who coined the term allopathy. And he saw that he was harming people more than helping them, and he became very disillusioned. And so he stopped practicing altogether and instead started translating medical texts. And one day he was translating a text on chincona bark, which is the bark of this Peruvian tree. It has a lot of quinine in it, and it was used to prevent and to treat malaria. And it's still an important medicine in the treatment of malaria today. But in the text he was translating, the guy, Cullen, who wrote the treatise, said, well, we think this is effective because it's of its astringent qualities. And Hahnemann thinks to himself, well, there's lots of stuff out there that's astringent and it doesn't cure malaria, so what's going on here? And so he decided to start taking it himself to see what would happen. And you can look up the symptoms of quinine poisoning, and it's very similar to the symptoms of malaria. Intermittent fevers, vomiting and diarrhea. And he realized that he was getting the symptoms of the disease from the medicine used to treat that disease, that illness. And that's where that idea cemented of like cures like. So an example of that is like what happens when you chop an onion, your eyes start to tear, your nose waters, and what kind of illness looks like that? I mean, a cold, allergies. So in homeopathy, we would use the specially prepared onion potentially to treat your allergies or your cold. That's an example I love to use. The next aspect was that in Hahnemann's time, the substances they understood really well the symptom picture of were poisons. And they were also a large part of the medicine of the day. We always hear how they were treating people with mercury and with arsenic and with these really corrosive substances. So understanding those, he was able to start seeing symptom pictures in his patients, finding the equivalent poison, but he didn't want to poison his patients. So he started diluting his poisons and being into alchemy and chemistry and all this stuff that he had been studying on his own. He came to the idea of what we call succussion, which is shaking a vial with the substance really hard. He would actually take a Bible and take his vial and succuss 100 times like this against the Bible between every dilution. So he would, it was a process of serial succussion and serial dilution. And he found that as he was diluting further, often the healing properties of the medicine were getting stronger and stronger. And the toxicity was not an issue. And so that's why we say homeopathy is completely non-toxic. We do occasionally have side effects from homeopathy, which can be what we call proving symptoms. If you're taking the wrong remedy and repeating it too many times, you can end up with a problem. If you hit something with a remedy with an energy that's a little too strong, you can get like a healing crisis at first before you start to feel better. So you're asking if there's side effects. There can be side effects, but in all essence, it's non-toxic. You're not going to really hurt someone long-term with homeopathy, and it's very safe. It means it's safe for pregnant women, it's safe in infants, it's safe for plants, it's safe for animals. It has a very wide range of use. So the word homeopathy means similar suffering, and the word allopathy means different from suffering. And so that's where that idea of like cures like in homeopathy, and in allopathy, we're treating something that has nothing to do with the disease, or we're just stopping and using something contrary to the process in the body.
Right. So when America in the late 1800s was kind of thriving with homeopathy, the medical schools were there, the physicians were there and trained in these schools. Flexner report comes, kind of shifts a lot of that, or almost all that. Are there areas in the world where that didn't happen, where homeopathy continued to thrive to this day?
Yeah, Europe, until recently, in the last decade or so, there's been a huge attack on homeopathy in Europe, which is changing national policies across many countries. But until recently, you know, 40% of French physicians were using homeopathy as a basic part of their practice. Mm. In the UK, there were homeopathic hospitals all over the country until very recently. The royal family has been using homeopathy as their main form of medicine since the time of Queen Victoria. And in my film, I interviewed Queen Elizabeth's homeopath, who unfortunately passed away several years ago. But, and Prince Charles is the royal patron of the Faculty of Homeopathy. Even with all that, in that time, they've managed to rename, there's a very important homeopathic hospital in London called the Royal London Homeopathic Hospital. It was renamed a complementary medicine hospital, and they've taken homeopathy off the NHS, where before it was available through the public healthcare system. Switzerland, it's still available under the public healthcare system. It really varies from country to country, but it was very strong in Europe until very recently. Homeopathy in India is thriving. When Modi came into power, he felt that natural medicine wasn't getting enough of political impact, and he created a new Ministry of Medicine, which is very specific to, he calls it Indian medicine or Ayush. And it's an acronym for Ayurveda, Yoga, Unami, I think that's what it's called, Siddha, and homeopathy. And there are homeopathic schools all over India. It's a properly recognized medical degree, and it's one of the most used forms of medicine in India. So yes, other parts of the world have continued to have a very strong tradition of homeopathy.
Well, speaking of India, a part of your film talked about the Banerjee, Dr. Banerjee, Banerjee protocols. I was just blown away just by the volume, the sheer volume of patients he was talking about. But can you share a little bit about the Banerjees?
Sure. So they were a father and son duo. And the father started playing around with different protocols. He was seeing so many patients, and he wanted to make homeopathy, he wanted to be able to work faster. Traditionally, homeopathy is about the individualized patient. We take time with our patients. For me, an initial appointment can be up to 2 hours, sometimes even longer, because we want to understand all of a person's patterns, physical, mental, emotional. The Banerjees kind of flipped that on its head and started to see people very, very quickly, and started to understand the action of specific remedies on very specific ailments and even in very specific potencies. And where they found that they were incredibly effective was in the treatment of cancers and specifically brain tumors. They became very well known for their treatment of brain tumors, where Western medicine has, I think, less than a 5% success rate in treating glioblastomas. They were having rates of 80% plus. And success didn't mean necessarily the tumor totally disappeared. In a lot of the cases, that's exactly what happens. The tumor completely regresses, but often the body kind of like isolates the tumor and it stops to grow and it stops its trajectory. So their results are unbelievable. They, unfortunately, though their protocols continue, their clinic in Calcutta continues to prep. They've taught many people, and they have their students there, and they've taught homeopaths all over the world. Unfortunately, they've both passed away. Prasanta, the father, I think he passed away from old age, but his son died very mysteriously during COVID. I spoke to him one day, and a week later, he was suddenly dead from multi-organ failure. And it was, to me, it was very strange circumstances.
That is odd. And there's been a lot of holistic practitioners that have died under strange circumstances over the years. I think in the film, correct me if I'm wrong, but some days they were seeing upwards of like 1,200 patients a day, cancer patients or just patients in general?
Patients in general. There would be a massive lineup outside that we start the night before.
Yeah.
And there's like people sleeping on the street waiting to be seen. And you saw that all these like food stalls popped up to keep all these hungry people fed. So there's this whole economy that's risen around the clinic, and people come from all over India, from all over Asia to be seen by the doctors. And that's what they do. They camp out outside until someone can see them.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's amazing. Well, I love that part of the film, just to see another way to practice medicine and just the sheer volume.
Yes. And the level of data that they've collected from that volume of people, and That became a huge part of their project, and what they were doing was to make sure that they're collecting data in a very clean way so that they can research and they can see what's going on.
Yeah. Right. And so because the leadership, political leadership in India is more supportive, they make more headway in terms of research and just spreading this to the masses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, India has a whole slew of research journals dedicated to homeopathy. They have research facilities. They have hospitals doing incredible work. But it's very hard to get that work published outside of India.
Yeah. Another part of the film, you talked about some practitioners in Cuba, and in particular, some outbreaks, like when hurricanes come and the power's knocked out and there's lots of water and feces and contaminants, and you know, you can get outbreaks of certain infections, and they just couldn't get a certain remedy. So there are homeopathic remedies available. And in this one particular outbreak in this area where they use a homeopathy, the infection rate was so much lower. But so could you share a little bit of that story?
Yeah. So there's a disease called leptospirosis. And most of us in the West or in the North aren't familiar with this disease, though vets are, because they actually vaccinate all dogs and cats against this bacteria. But it's a huge problem in tropical countries, and it's spread through water. It's hard to diagnose. It looks a lot like dengue, kind of like vague, nonspecific symptom picture. And it turns out that Cuba, the Finley Institute, which is a pharmaceutical company in Cuba, is the only company in the world that makes a human vaccine for leptospirosis. Hmm. But Cuba being Cuba, they were very open to natural medicine. The Finley Institute has been studying all kinds of natural medicine for decades, and they weren't closed to it. And in 2007, I believe, they were starting to see rates of leptospirosis starting to come up. And then suddenly, the east coast of Cuba got hit by a terrible hurricane, one of the worst hurricanes they'd ever seen. It was a huge disaster. People lost their homes. And leptospirosis is spread through water. So standing water, through people walking through water. You can have the slightest, like a mosquito bite on your leg or a small abrasion, and that's enough of an entry point for this spirochete to get into your blood. And the rates were starting to climb and climb and climb. And the problem was that they actually didn't have enough vaccine for the population that needed it, number one. Number two, the vaccine takes months to take effect in two doses and needs cold transport chain. And when you don't have power, when you don't have infrastructure, it's impossible to get it out to a population. And it's not going to help the population in that moment. A vaccine needs to be used ahead of time, ahead of an emergency. So they'd had an interesting experience in Brazil where they learned about homeopathy and the use of homeopathy to support vaccine side effects and the effectiveness of vaccines in some past campaigns that they had been involved with. And they thought, well, let's do this. Let's go in there. Let's make a homeopathic remedy and let's see if we can help people. And the whole country, like the armed forces, the National Health Ministry, and the Finley Institute, they got together. They isolated the strains of leptospirosis of that breakout. And they made a homeopathic remedy from the leptospirosis. And they got it to over 2 million people in that region very quickly. And the rates of leptospirosis crashed. It almost disappeared. What made it especially interesting, though, is that the following year was the worst year on record for hurricanes in all of Cuba, and the entire country got hit by 3 different hurricanes. This led to them having a control group, which was the rest of Cuba, and then the intervened region that got the homeopathic remedy. And what they were able to see was that after 2008, with all these hurricanes, the part of Cuba that had no homeopathic intervention, the rates of leptospirosis were up like 20%. And in the intervened area, the rates of leptospirosis were down over 80% of historical record.
Wow.
So it was really meaningful. And when they tried to publish their results, every medical journal turned them down, and they couldn't understand why. There were zero scientific explanation. Like, I don't know if it was the Lancet or British Medical Journal, but one of the journals requested that they have every single person who took the remedy sign a waiver. They'd never been asked anything like this before. Hmm. And when they applied, when they started putting this research out, they actually have a vaccine journal, and it lost its PubMed indexing. Because how dare the Finley Institute be playing with homeopathy and trying to push other narratives out there?
Wow. Yeah, I can believe it, unfortunately. Well, if there were some skeptical physicians out there listening, or just people in general, are there some other or any, and newer, I mean, that was 2007, 2008, but other, where else would you point people? Obviously your film for sure. But are there other studies, other meta-analysis or other proof that you like to point people to that are really trying to dig into this?
Yeah, well, there's an organization called the Homeopathic Research Institute, and they're based out of the UK. They have an incredible database of research that you can access straight from their website. I think they have three different databases. There's basic research, and then there's human trials as well. But what's really interesting, I think it was 2023, 2024, a meta-analysis came out of meta-analyses, which was really great. And a systemic review of meta-analyses came out. Mm-hmm. And what this means is that they looked at, I'm going to rephrase that again, it's a systemic review of systemic reviews with meta-analyses.
Okay, wow.
So powerful. So to explain, a systematic review is a study that tries to look at a large range of studies. They set parameters, they look for high quality research. And because they're expanding the number of studies they're looking at, they're able to come to conclusions. And so these guys did a study of multiple, I think they looked at five different systematic reviews. And what's interesting is they also looked at systematic reviews that in their published conclusions had come out with a conclusion that homeopathy doesn't work. But when you looked at their actual research, the studies actually said the opposite. So what's really interesting here, I'm just going to grab it so I can refer to it easily.
And I've seen that with other published systemic reviews. You just read the little narrative there or conclusion, but when you actually go look at the data, it's exactly opposite. You would think it's impossible, but it's definitely possible.
And I mean, sometimes it's just about following the money, seeing who funded the study and where it's coming from.
Right.
But these guys, they looked at six different studies, and really all of them came out to the conclusion that homeopathy is effective over placebo. And the higher the quality of the study, the more likely it is to show in individualized homeopathy that it is highly effective. One of our best meta-analyses is by this gentleman by the name of Robert Mathey. And he was the first one to really look at the highest quality studies that we have. And the higher the quality, the better the study is done, the more likely it is to show that homeopathy is effective.
Wow.
But there's so much stuff out there, and I really encourage people to visit the Homeopathic Research Institute's website.
Okay, cool. Let's maybe shift a little bit to your personal. You've been practicing for 20 plus years, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And I feel old say that.
Well, yeah, me too. I still have an 8-year-old, so I still feel young.
I have a 17-year-old.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Talk more about some of the new things we were talking about before we hit record. Some online courses are coming in the future, near future. In pediatrics in particular, your passion for kids. I told you before we hit record, there's a lot of mamas in this community in West Texas who have taken some interest in homeopathy and have learned on their own, self-study. Some group study is going on. So just talk about that a little bit and why kids in particular and pediatrics in particular.
Yeah, well, I want to touch on something that you just made me think of, which is when the Flexner report came out, when they shut down homeopathy, when they closed down the homeopathic hospitals and made it illegal almost to practice. What kept homeopathy alive in the United States and Canada was moms. Mm. It was them sharing information with other moms, them making remedies, study groups. And so now that we're in a time where the FDA has come out very strongly against homeopathy, same in Canada, they're doing their best to really reduce access to all forms of natural medicine. It may be the parents who are going to keep this beautiful healing art alive and vibrant. And so on one level, it's really important for me to make sure that there's a community of homeopathic lovers that are learning, that are using, that are sharing. And I love these communities in the US. There's some very strong parent communities, mom communities, and I love working with them. There'll often be a hub, like someone who's done a lot of homeopathic practice learning, using it on their children, and they start sharing it with other parents, and they start study groups, and they start exchanging remedies. And it's so important to keep homeopathy alive this way. That makes me, it really excites me. The other thing is we're now, I think, facing a future generation whose lifespan is supposed to be shorter than our own, where chronic disease is rampant. We're in a medical tradition now that's exchanging acute illness for chronic illness. And our treatments and the way we try to avoid acute disease is actually causing long-term issues and weaker health outcomes for future generations. Like that antibiotic you give your 3-year-old could affect them when they're 18, can affect them when they're 30. And then as you're adding more and more, like how often are people taking antibiotics? Every year, every few years, you're causing further and further disruption to the microbiome, and it's not even just that, we're affecting all aspects of our health. I think Tylenol causes more over-the-counter or more deaths than any other over-the-counter medication. It's really toxic to the liver. We can see long-term effects in terms of asthma, allergies, autoimmune conditions. And so if we can help parents feel really confident in one is the body's ability to heal itself, like, I don't know if God, like if you believe in God or whatever it is that you want to call the universal source, it didn't make all this and create something that is stupid, that can't treat itself, that can't maintain its own health, really. So yeah. Being able to trust in the innate power of the body and then have tools to help provide comfort, to help heal, to help support the actual pathways that the body uses to heal. If we can give parents that, I think of future generations and the health that we can actually have is incredible. My daughter is about to turn 18. She hasn't taken an antibiotic in her life. I think she took a Tylenol once. She'll actually threaten me. She'll call me and go, "Mom, I need your help right now." And if I'm busy, I'll be like, "I'll call you back. I'm going to take an Advil if you don't tell me what to do right now."
Oh, she knows where to hit you right where you're right in your heart.
Drop everything. So yeah, that's my work. That's where I'm putting more of my energy now. And I've been teaching courses online, empowering parents to, one, know how to use homeopathy, know how to study homeopathy, and to be able to treat those basic things that happen at home, the ear infections, the digestive stuff, the flus, the burns, the injuries, the things that often have people running to the doctor, but you don't need the doctor to deal with these kinds of situations. And that's my focus right now. So yeah, I'm launching a course online. People can visit magicpillsmovie.com. They can watch the film there. And if you click on course, the landing page should be up in a couple days, but we'll see when this comes out. But if it's not, you can just sign up for the wait list and we'll email you in a couple of weeks and let you know when the next course is launching.
Awesome.
4 weeks, you learn how to homeopathy works so that you can apply it in different situations, and you learn how to prepare your own kit at home so you're ready when you need it.
So cool. I know a lot of the listeners will want to take advantage of that course and get more equipped, feel more confident, especially with their kiddos. So that's mm-hmm. awesome. So you said Magic Pills with an S, movie.com.
Yeah.
Yep. And then click course, and it's coming soon, guys. I want to shift again a little bit and tell this little story. I think I probably told it before to the audience, but then get your thoughts. And because it's about water, the memory of water. I had Gerald Pollack on here. And guys, if y'all don't know who that is, an awesome guy, professor, University of Washington, wrote The Fourth Phase of Water. And this fourth phase, we all learned three phases of water: liquid, and then water vapor, and ice, solid. And Dr. Pollack figured out this fourth, what he calls easy water, fourth phase water. And it's kind of like I called it liquid crystal, but kind of like Jell-O, but more liquidy than Jell-O. Fascinating, just physical structural properties of this fourth phase of water. Turns out it's in living things like plants and an apple and a cucumber. There's structured water in it, water in motion in nature, like going down a stream or a brook, a river. Aquifer, spring water, has some structured water in it. Water inside of people is supposed to be structured. It's specifically in your blood, and there's a negative charge to this water, H3O2, and the negative charge is what helps propel that water or the blood through the blood vessel, actually, because at the very, very bottom of your, where that artery, you know, out of your heart, the aorta down to all the arteries, delivers blood to all your cells. And then it's got to turn around. It transitions in the capillary, and then it turns into a vein, and the vein brings that blood back up to the heart and the lung to get reoxygenated. What that turning point at the capillary, those capillaries are so tiny. It's actually the red blood cells bigger than that capillary diameter. And so the fascinating physics of blood flow and this negative charge and the fourth phase of water being involved, it's really, really cool. But anyways, Dr. Pollack, in this interview I was listening years ago, and he was explaining about homeopathy, and he was talking about this doctor in France, Dr. Jacques Benveniste. Mm-hmm. And Benveniste was a conventional regular doctor, researcher, he's an immunologist, I believe, and invented some special tests that test your immune system cells if you're allergic to certain things like cats or dogs or whatever. But anyways, in his lab, he had a huge lab, I think like 50 employees or something like that, well-respected, famous researcher. But he had a homeopath show up one day and say, "Hey, would you let me run an experiment in your lab where I use one of these remedies?" And I'm just making this part up because I don't remember the details, but say it was dog dander that someone's allergic to, and you're actually testing the person's blood against actual physical proteins of dog dander. But the homeopath said he wanted to take that dog dander and dilute it. You know, put that dog dander, a drop of it, into pure water, a vial, and then shake it up, like Ananda was talking about, and then take a drop out of that and put it into another vial of pure water and shake it up and take a drop out of that and keep doing that a lot of times to where there's no more physical dog dander in the water. And then test that. Use that as the test for the patient's blood to see if they're allergic. So he did, and it worked. This water that should have nothing in it actually tested positive on this patient's the immune system cells degranulated or released histamine. Mm-hmm. It was huge. Like Ben Benice was blown away and like couldn't believe it, and made him repeat it over and over and over, and he did, and they repeated it so many times and it was true, submitted it to the journal Nature. And they, of course, said, what in the world? And they went back and forth, I think, for a while. They wouldn't publish it. Eventually they did, or eventually they sent some guys to the lab to like watch and monitor. Are y'all cheating somehow, fraud, you know, doing fraudulent stuff here? Turned into kind of a controversial thing. And Vin Venice's name kind of got drugged through the mud. He had to defend himself and his research, and he actually died young. And then that triggered Luc Montagnier, another well-respected scientist who won the Nobel Prize for discovering HIV. Montagnier wanted to step into this arena and basically prove if Vin Venice was a fraud or not. And Montagnier did a test with a homeopathic remedy, but of DNA genetic material that he diluted down to where there's no more DNA genetic material in there. And he was able to reconstitute this DNA from this water, this homeopathic dilution. So basically Montagnier just proved it there. And of course it's been proven many times over. But that, when Dr. Pollack was explaining that story, and he, of course, goes into more about how this special water is, holds memory. I mean, it's like a supercomputer. And then if you think about how we're made of water, our cells are made of water, our cells float in water, our DNA floats in water, our mitochondria floats in water, we're one big bag of water. Every 10th molecule in you is something besides water. And if water is holding memory, and water is impacted by thoughts and words and thing, all kinds of things. So it's just this whole fascinating other part of science that's moving out of the natural Newtonian particle only. I can measure it with my five senses, and getting more into this invisible realm, quantum realm, spiritual realm, energy medicine realm. This is the interplay of that. So, And homeopathy's, you know, a big part of this is based off not only like curing like, but that like being diluted down to where there's no more physical, there's just some energetic imprint information being transmitted somehow. So just fascinating. I encourage y'all to go back, find Gerald Pollack's interview, or get his book, Fourth Phase of Water. It's pretty fascinating. But Ananda, any thoughts, comments in regards to that aspect of homeopathy? Yeah.
Well, Jacques Benveniste, really a hero for homeopathy. And that study was using histaminum. So he took homeopathic histamine and looked at how the mast cells in a petri dish, how they would respond to this homeopathic histamine. So as you said, super diluted according to Avogadro's number, which is a chemistry constant, there should be not a single molecule left in that solution that's being put on these cells. But the cells had a reaction to the histamine. And that study was not only replicated in Benveniste's lab, it's been replicated in dozens of labs all over the world. And what happened, like Nature actually published the study, and then they retracted it. And they sent in, I don't know if you remember the Amazing Randy, the skeptic magician, and they did a whole television show about it. And Randy held the, what's it called? Like the schema that says what's verum and what's placebo at the end. And no one in the lab knew except for Magic Randy. So when they sent him to look at the lab, that's when they supposedly exposed Benveniste as this big fraud. But really, you know, Randy had this $1 million challenge, and I know other people who've challenged him, and when he's ever been in a position where he could lose, he wouldn't take on the challenge or the opportunity. So I really truly believe like that was a massive setup for Benveniste. And that's what, yeah, his name got dragged through the mud. What Luc Montagnier was doing was fascinating. And this is the stuff that like turns our understanding of physics, of how the world works, of what is matter, what is energy, how do these things affect each other on its head. Luc Montagnier was taking HIV DNA and diluting it. And so Luc Montagnier won the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus. And he dedicated his whole life to curing AIDS after that. I don't want to get into the whole discussion of whether it's real or isn't real, but I did meet Luc, and he was an amazing human being. And so he was making homeopathic dilutions of HIV, recording the electromagnetic field coming off of that dilution, and then sending that information to another computer across the country. And that computer would then take a solution of homeopathically prepared HIV. So there should be nothing in this solution. It's been filtered. It's just water, but it's gone through that process of serial succussion and dilution. And then they would expose it to that electromagnetic frequency that they got from the original substance. And suddenly, like, the DNA would appear in that water.
Yeah.
So we don't understand. We don't yet understand, like, this could point to the origins of life. This could point to all kinds of very interesting phenomenon that is not very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not convenient for the scientific community.
Yep. Scientists can be, and doctors can be, just a little stubborn in changing their thoughts and introducing new concepts.
Yeah.
Well, it's really a fascinating topic. The film's awesome, guys. Magic Pill.
Can I add a little thing there?
Movie.com. Yes, I was going to give you the last word because we have a few more minutes, you know, 5 minutes or so. But so,
just because we're talking about Benveniste and Luc Montagnier, in the film, we look at Dr. Jayesh Balare, who's a chemical engineer who specializes in nanochemistry in IIT Mumbai, the Indian Institute of Technology. And he's one of the few human beings in the world to have 24/7 access to an electron microscope. And he's not a homeopath. He'd never tried homeopathy in his life. But a friend of his said, why don't you put one of these homeopathic remedies under your microscope and let's see what we find. And they took very high potencies, like 200 C, 1 M, 10 M, and they started with a remedy made from gold. And they looked, mostly they started with minerals because they could use spectroscopy at the nano level to see what it was they were looking at and to identify it. And so they found over and over again source material, nanoparticles made from gold in these very high dilutions where there should be no source material whatsoever. And this work has also been replicated. Dr. Iris Bell out of Arizona replicated it. And I know it's been done in Canada and like at least a dozen different labs around the world. And so we know that there's something going on there and we don't understand it, but Avogadro's number doesn't stand up. There continues to be nanoparticle source material in remedies at very high potencies. So very interesting.
Yeah.
Really requires more research and more attention. And I'm excited to see where that goes.
Fascinating. Well, where would you say for like a newbie to start kind of dabbling or start learning? Like, what would be some next steps for someone who might be interested in learning homeopathic remedies?
Well, I'm going to push my course again there because that's exactly
what I'm working to do is
to help newbies or people with some basic understanding of homeopathy to really be able to start using it. It's affordable, it's non-toxic, it's not scary. It's a really easy thing to start playing with. There's some fantastic books out there. What's her name? I can't think of her name right now, but you're not going to go wrong. Like, Reichenberg Ullman, there are a couple, they've written some great books on getting started. Miranda Castro has some great introductory books. And go to your health local health food store, pick up 10, 15 basic remedies, and you're going to be able to get started right away. Even like AI can be a little problematic, but you know, if you know what symptoms to plug in, the thing with homeopathy is it's not a one size fits all solution. So if you kind of know what's happening with your child, say they've got a flu, they feel restless, they're thirsty, their body aches, you plug these symptoms into AI. AI is pretty good at helping you identify a good over-the-counter remedy you can use. The more you understand homeopathy, the more you understand what kind of symptoms you're looking for, how to individualize, then you're going to get much better output from AI. But yeah, it's not a bad place to start.
Yeah, awesome. And once again, what was the website on the research that you mentioned earlier?
Homeopathic Research Institute.
Okay.
Just Google that. I think it's hri.org. I'm not 100% sure on that. Yeah. So if you Google Homeopathic Research Institute, you'll find it.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, guys. I'm endorsing the movie. It was awesome. And I love that you went on site and interviewed and, you know, traveled the world and just a fascinating, just from the historical even perspective of it. So I know that's a big job to create a film. So great work. That'll be something available for generations too. So y'all can check that out again, magicpillsmovie.com.
That's it.
And Ananda Moore. And y'all check out her course too. The button is on the website. And if it's not there when this podcast comes out, it will be soon because the tech guys said so. It's been a little delayed, guys. That's a little inside there. But keep checking back. I think there's a waiting list you can sign up for on there. So check out Ananda's course. Ananda, thank you for joining us today. You're always welcome back anytime.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Thanks, Dr. Ben. This was fantastic.
You're welcome. All right, everybody. Another great show. So excited to get this one out there. Spread it around to all your friends. It'll be on YouTube and all the podcast platforms, and it'll be housed on our website too. We'll see you next week. We'll be back with another great show. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.